Tentor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hunted by Craig Halloran, narrated by Tim Campbell. Chapter 1. On a clear day in Nalzambor, two dragons flew beneath the broken piles of clouds. Sliver's silver scales glinted in the glowing sun breaking between the clouds. Beside him flew Master Elwine. The forest-green dragon's serpentine figure did graceful barrel rolls through the air. She let out a cheery roar. Sliver spread out his wings, letting the air lift him higher, and dove quickly downward. He let out his own mighty roar that sounded like 10 lions. Elwine's dark green wings gently beat against the wind. She stretched out her neck to full length. She dove like a missile, careening on a deadly path before it hit the earth.
"I see what you are playing," Sliver shouted.
He turned after her in pursuit, aiming at the long, slender tail that waved stiffly behind her. He caught up to her, pulling in right alongside her.
"You can't outfly a silver shade."
"Oh, but can't I?"
she said, eyeing him with supreme confidence.
"Let's see you can skim the ground closest before crashing into it then, mighty Sliver."
"You're challenging me to a pull-up. So be it then."
Sliver bore down toward the ground. The air whistled through his horns, making a sharp shrilling sound. Beside him, Elwine's scale-covered figure made a whistling sound of its own. Her wings were folded behind her back, and her gemstone eyes were fastened on the ground. A field of green peppered in colorful wildflowers waited to catch them below. A band of wild horses galloped across the plains. Only 1,000 feet remained between the dragons and the ground.
"You better get ready to pull up," Sliver shouted.
"Never, you better pull up."
Elwine edged past him. Sliver counted the space out in his head. The pull-up was a game that dragons played as soon as their wings let them fly. The entire goal was to see who would chicken out first. Whoever spread their wings first usually lost. Sliver never lost.
300, 200, 100.
He glanced at Elwine. Her eyes were set. 50 feet.
"Pull up!"
25. Elwine's wings sprang out. Sliver laughed. Fanning out his wings, he pulled up just in time to let his belly skim the ground. He turned to see Elwine skipping over the grasses like a stone being skipped across the pond. She made a trail 40 feet long before coming to a stop in a heap. She didn't move.
"Oh no."
Sliver dashed to her side. Elwine's body started to spasm, scales shaking all over. Sliver gathered himself along her side.
"Speak to me, Elwine, speak to me."
She sat up laughing. Dirt covered her body and clods of grass and wildflowers were stuck between her horns. With a cheery voice, she said,
"That was fun."
"I'm glad you are well. You almost scared the dragon dung out of me."
He eyed her horns. "I like your hat. It's very fitting." Both dragons broke up laughing. Finally, Sliver helped Elwine to her feet. She stood almost as tall as him, just over 7 feet, with a tail that swished over the grasses. Both of them had long arms and legs, more like men. They walked upright just as comfortably as they did on all fours. In a way, they were dragon-like men with wings. He dusted the dirt from her forest-green scales while she wiped the soil crusting over her long eyelashes from her eyes.
"That was a very impressive maneuver for someone who has not stretched her wings in a while.
I've been in the mountain so long that I'd almost forgotten the joy of flying. I'm not so sure I want to go back in the mountain again."
She breathed deeply through her nostrils.
"The air is much fresher here. Sliver, would you mind if we walked for a while? I love the flying, but being a forest dragon, well, you know I also enjoy the beauty of the earth."
"Certainly. I'm not in a rush for our rendezvous with Boldergild anyway. But we can't remain exposed very long. The farther out of sight and higher in the air, the better."
Elwine pointed a claw at the forest line not so far in the distance. Its outer layer was barricaded by shrubbery thick with thorns.
"The Willowax look a safer place to roam as any. You are the seasoned dragon in worldly affairs. Please,"
she stepped aside.
"Lead the way."
Elbows out and strutting like a man, Sliver led the way to the woodland. Finding the gap in the bush, he pushed some of it aside, letting Elwine enter the shade of the green leafy trees. Looking at him, Elwine said,
"You really do like acting like a man, don't you?"
Scratching his long neck, he said,
"I find the races highly imaginative. They have amazing inventions in their cities and seem to live such robust lives. I really appreciate the grand efforts they put into their doings." "I can understand that, but their imaginations are often wicked, and the unwise often mistake evil for good. Is that not so?"
"It's that way everywhere, I suppose, but it is exciting."
"Well, that isn't the kind of excitement I'm looking for. I just want to find Nath."
Elwyn looked up into the branches. Two chipmunks were sitting side by side, looking down on her. They scurried down the trunk and hopped onto her shoulders. She giggled.
"Look, I have followers. Cute ones, too. I wonder what they taste like."
"It's hardly a meal, but I've never had chipmunk before."
Sliver opened his jaws wide. Quick as a batting eyelash, Elwyn plucked both of the chipmunks into her hands. She tossed one of them into Sliver's open maw and chomped down the other. She clacked her teeth together.
"Bland. Very bland."
"Agreed. We'll have to find you a plate of people food and see what you think about that."
She tilted her head.
"Is people food made of people?"
"Don't be silly. People don't eat people, generally speaking. It's mostly food from livestock and farmed in gardens and trees."
Sliver gave her a quizzical look.
"Certainly you knew that. Are you teasing me, Elwyn?"
"Yes, but only because you were easy to tease."
Her nostrils flared. She sniffed.
"What is that horrid smell?"
Sliver's eyes narrowed. His tail stiffened behind him. The low branches rustled. He twisted his head toward the sound. Monstrous hoofed beasts burst out from behind the tree, bearing down on them with murder in their eyes.
Chapter 2. Icy bits of snow stung Nath's cheeks. Dark gray clouds floated slowly across the sky. The highland grasses were frosted with snow as he followed Darkin's trail. They were headed west, toward Stonewater Keep, where Chazan would be. Chazan, the former leader of the Triadine, from Dragonholm, turned Caligan, was Mayfawn's former love, but he had been killed by Lord Darkin. Nath was still under the belief that Chazan was the leader of the Caligan and that he still lived. It was just what Darkin wanted. Darkin moved with the grace of a brawny forest feline. His stride was easy and his shoulder-length copper hair swept across his back. He was an imposing figure, in his black leather armor, elven sword on hip and arm swinging at his sides. Darkin glanced back at Nath, gave a nod, and kept going. Stonewater Keep wasn't far from where they departed the Poacher's Fort. From what they gathered from the Caligan, it was a 3-day walk at most. With the Brothers of the Wind, who survived the battle with the half-giant brothers Reaver and Slaughter, Darkin wanted to rally more forces. They spent the next several days doing so. Now a band of 20 more Brothers of the Wind joined them. They wore the leather clothing and fur of hunters. Swords and daggers dressed their narrow hips. Many slung a quiver over their backs and carried a bow in hand. They all had some feathers and braids in their hair and hardly said a word. Nath turned and walked backward to face Mayfawn. She moved on silent footsteps right behind him, using his body as a shield from the wind. A heavy, dark green blanket was wrapped over her shoulder. Her short, wavy blonde hair hung just over her sparkling eyes. Her soft lips had turned a little blue. "You look like you were freezing to death."
"I haven't been warm since the fire ended last night," Mayfawn said. "Achoo! I feel like an icicle."
"Don't you mean an elf-sickle?"
"Ha ha," she said, shooting an irritated look at him. "That might be funny if it was you freezing and not me. Tell me, does your dragon blood keep you warm? I haven't ever seen a chill bump on your body."
Nath shrugged. "I suppose it does. As for you, the other elves in Darkin seem to be doing well. Not a one of them is shivered." She narrowed her eyes on him.
"What?" he said. "It's just an observation."
She sneezed so hard she slipped on the grass and fell down. Nath helped her up by the elbow. Chuckling, he said, "I never saw someone sneeze so hard that they fell. What is wrong with you?"
"I think I'm sick," she said, wiping her nose on her blanket.
"Sick? What do you mean?" She rolled her eyes.
"Yes, I can only imagine that you don't get sick either. I think being in that filthy dungeon made me sick. That's what happens when you are forced to lie in the grime and dirt. Illness comes. It can kill."
"You're gonna die?" He wrapped her in his arms and held her tight. "I won't let you die. We'll find a cure for you."
"No, I won't die." She sneezed into his chest. "It will pass. I just have to feel like I'm dying."
She nuzzled into his chest.
"You could let go of me, but it feels good. You're warm."
"Just stay put." His eyes slid to the right. The elves had formed a ring around them both, eyeing them with deadpan stares.
Darkin approached Nath with a raised eyebrow. "What's going on? Are we having a moment?"
"Mayfan says she is sick," Nath replied.
She pushed out of his arms. "I can speak for myself. I'm fine, Darkin. Just as chill as the bottom of a well. I can manage."
Darkin covered her forehead with the palm of his hand. "You're burning hot with fever. Dearest, I'm so sorry." He slid his gaze over to Nath. "Are you well?"
Nath nodded.
"You shouldn't be walking, Mayfan." Darkin scooped her up in his arms. "You need to rest."
"Darkin, no,"
she pleaded.
"I feel silly."
"No arguments. We should make the river by dusk. We'll camp, set you by the fire, and hope your fever breaks."
He gave Nath a nod. "Come along. I'll probably need you to share the load with me. My back has limitations."
"I'll help any way I can," Nath said, looking at Mayfan. He'd never seen her in such poor condition.
Cradled in Darkin's arms, she seemed to shrivel as she shivered, sneezed, and coughed. He reached out and touched her cheek.
"We'll get you through this."
She gave a feeble nod and squeezed her eyes shut.
"Sultans of Sulphur, she sleeps," Darkin commented.
"Is that bad?"
"No. It should be good, but this fever took her quick. One never knows with sickness and disease. There are so many dangerous forms."
Darkin's chin sagged. "The most danger lies in what cannot be seen. Remember that, Nath. There is much in this world that we do not comprehend."
"I will."
Pushing through the wind, they marched on, with the elves walking in rows in front of and behind them. Darkin and Nath exchanged Mayfan between them a few times before they made it to the river. The brothers of the wind made a fire and pitched a small tent just big enough to shield her from the wind. Darkin bundled her up in her blanket and lay her inside the tent.
"Keep that fire going. She needs all the warmth she can get."
Chapter 3
"Centaurs!" Sliver shouted to Elwine.
Flattening to all fours, he scurried out of the half-man, half-horse's path. The centaur had an extraordinary physique. Standing over 8 feet tall, the bare-chested, coarse-haired brute's upper body was layered in thick muscle. The centaur reared around, glaring back, eyes fastening on Sliver. The centaur carried a branch crudely fashioned into a spear. Horns like a ram's curled back out of his skull. The centaur reared up on its hind legs and chortled weirdly like a wild horse. Coming down, the brutish centaur's front hoof clawed at the ground. The centaur charged. Sliver slipped away from the centaur's crude spear. The wood shaft snapped against the trunk of the tree. He'd collided in many battles with assortments of races and creatures. The centaurs were among them. They were a strange breed of brutes, like giants, known for exceptional cruelty and twisted imaginations. They would hunt, kill, and torment anything that was not their species. They were fierce warriors with a deep and devious code of destruction. The centaur kicked Sliver, his rear legs catching Sliver full in the chest. He crashed wings first into a tree. He lifted his head up. The centaur came upon him horns first, crushing him into the ground. The centaur's massive arms pumped hard fists into Sliver's body. Sliver roared in the centaur's bearded face. The wild-eyed centaur's eyes filled with new rage. The monster punched harder, knuckles as hard as rocks bursting into Sliver's scales. The centaur chanted in broken, garbled speech. Spit flew from his wide mouth. Sliver shook his long neck. "Enough of this!" His mouth cracked wide open and a strand of white lightning shot out. The bolt seared the monster's hairy chest. The centaur's eyes lit up like lanterns. The lightning raced through the man's beast body, searing holes through his fur and skin. He backed off, bucking and flailing his arms like a man on fire. The lightning did its work. Silvery strings of energy worked through the man-beast's body, singeing hairs and turning them to ash. The centaur bolted away at a full gallop, crashed into a tree face first, fell over, and died. Sliver rose up on his hind legs. He rubbed the scales on his chest, wincing as he did so.
"I felt every bit of that. Ugh."
Gathering his senses, he hustled toward the spot where he last saw Elwine. A second centaur had chased her into the woods. Following that disturbed ground, he quickly came upon her in the next clearing. Holding a crudely made spear that was broken in half, Elwine stooped over a centaur that lay at her feet. It appeared to be dead, but didn't have a mark on it. Crossing his arms over his chest, Sliver asked, "Is it dead?"
"Of course it's dead. I wouldn't want to let a centaur attack me and live to tell about it. That would be shameful."
Elwine tossed the broken spear to Sliver. It was the top half of the shaft. She looked down at a spot out of Sliver's view.
Come.
Sliver walked to the other side of the bestial creature. The broken front end of the spear protruded from the centaur's chest.
You hit the heart?
Elwi nodded.
A blow to the heart will slay most creatures.
You killed it with its own weapon.
How did you disarm it?
Elwyn patted Sliver on the back.
You would know the answer to that if you spent more time training with me.
I don't have need for the archaic weapons of the races.
Says the dragon that wants to be a man,
she replied.
Touché.
Sliver and Elwyn abandoned the area. They walked in silence for a few miles, then resumed an old conversation.
Elwyn, you know Balzerth as well as any. Do you suspect that he knows things?
What do you mean?
She ducked under the low-hanging leafy branches and held them aside for Sliver.
I've always had a suspicious feeling that Balzerth knows what is going to happen before it happens.
So you think he knew that Nath would leave? Do you realize what you're implying? That would mean that Balzerth knew the fledglings would be slaughtered.
No, Sliver replied.
I don't think Balzerth has that sort of foreknowledge.
I believe he knew when he left that Nath would be tempted to leave. As eager as Nath was to spread his wings, it only makes sense. It was a test.
I don't follow. You still imply that Balzerth knew something bad would happen. What else would tempt Nath to leave?
Elwyn sighed.
And if Balzerth knew that, wouldn't he know about the corruption of the Trahedin?
Sliver shook his head.
I don't know. I just think that in life there are things that are destined to happen one way or the other. I feel Balzerth understands that, but he still cannot change the actions motivated by the hearts of others.
And who can change one's destiny? The path might sway, bend, and twist, but it still remains a path.
Ha! You are a deeper thinker than I've given you credit for, Sliver, she said.
What is that supposed to mean?
I always thought you were aloof and, well, stupid.
Stupid?
Elwyn let out a growling chuckle.
I'm only teasing.
No, I don't think you are. He gave her a stiff shove.
Stupid. You've debased me into the class of the Red Rocks lizards and dwarves.
I thought dwarves were stubborn but very intelligent.
I'll let you decide once you meet the Boulder Guilds. Tell me, what is the difference between stubborn and stupid? He asked.
Stubborn has merit.
Give me an example.
Let me get back to you on that.
Chapter 4 It was morning. Nath kneeled down by the river and filled his water skin. Rapids flowed between the icy, snow-covered rocks that jutted out of the cold black river, providing a constant roar. The winds whistled through the rigid grasses. It had been a long night without sleep, though he needed little of it. Mayfawn's wet coughing would wake him whenever he dozed off for a bit. He paced the riverbank alone while Darkin remained inside the small tent, keeping Mayfawn warm. Whatever this fever is, I hope it passes soon. Sickness was something foreign to Nath. Dragons, as far as he knew, didn't get sick. The other races, more fragile, were subject to a strange toxicity that could not be seen. He put the cap on his skin and headed back downriver toward the tent. He passed by two brothers of the wind who stood on the edge of the waters. Their hooded cloaks covered them down to their buckskin boots. Wrapped tight in their garb, they didn't acknowledge Nath's nod when he walked by.
Good morning to you too,
Nath said, shaking his head and moving on.
They have the personality of a dead tree stump.
The brothers of the wind were a lot more rigid than Darkin, Mayfawn, or any of the Trahedin he had known. It was unsettling. The worst part was that he hated to admit that maybe, just maybe, Hacksaw, the old knight from Huskin and Nath's departed ally, was right with his suspicions. He wondered how the old knight was. He missed him. Hacksaw, I hope you were back in Huskin with your feet propped up by the fire. Drink some of that awful pumpkin cider for me. Four elves were huddled over the campfire. They left a gap between them, allowing the heat to warm the side of the tent. Behind the tent, more of the elves stood in the grasses eyeing their surroundings. Their piercing eyes passed over Nath like a chill wind. Darkin emerged from the tent. He put his hands on his hips and arched his back.
That tent is barely made for one, let alone two.
He found Nath staring at him.
She's doing well. Not out of the woods yet, but the coughing has subsided and there is more color in her cheeks.
So she'll get better? Nath asked.
I'm confident she will. With any luck, the fever will break today. She is strong and has weathered far worse dilemmas, such as when Trazan stabbed her.
A deep frown crossed Tarkin's face. She was wrought with fever then.
I don't know how she made it, such a small little thing, but she did. Her will to live is as strong as iron. I love that about her. Me too. Nath started toward the tent. Can I see her? Darkin put a firm hand on his shoulder. In a moment, Nath. I came out because, though I am loath to leave her side, I'm feeling antsy. I was hoping to stretch my legs and do some scouting while you look after her. Scouting? You mean you're going to Stonewater Keep? We need to get a glimpse. I was going to take half of the Brothers of the Wind with me and leave the rest with you. You can watch after Mayfon while I'm gone. As I understand it, according to the Callaghan we captured, we are less than half a league from Chazan's threshold. Not hiding his disappointment, Nath said, we should stay together, wait for Mayfon to heal. It's just a scouting mission, Nath. We do this all the time. We'll depart immediately, find a safe place to cross the river, and return by dusk. Darkin patted Nath's shoulder. You won't even have time to miss us. But Darkin made a sharp whistle. 10 of the Brothers of the Wind moved out of their posts surrounding the tent. In a single column, they eased south down the riverbank, with Darkin falling in last. Turning and walking backward, Darkin smiled and waved. We'll hunt for pheasant along the way. And remember, keep that campfire burning. I'm trusting the love of my life into your caring hands. Nath's mouth hung open as the group of elves and Darkin walked along the river and vanished at the first westward bend. Slowly, Nath moved a strand of hair out of his mouth. He wanted to go. Instead, he'd been left standing in the cold. 2 elves slipped along his sides, following his stare. Nath looked at the one on his left. The elf's penetrating dark eyes held his. With smooth and creaseless skin, the elf made a slender smile and said in Elven, They'll return. Care if some of us hunt while we wait? No, that would be fine. The elf nodded. The other half of us would stay behind. The 2 elves gathered 3 more. Bows in the hands of all 5 of them, they headed away from the river into the tall grasses. Not used to the elves ever speaking to him, Nath said to himself, That was odd. Though it gave him some comfort, a feeling of normalcy, that had been lacking for quite some time. He was getting used to them, and they, it seemed, were getting used to him. He moved over to the campfire and warmed his hands over the dying flames. He made a quick trip up the riverbank, gathered driftwood, and came back. He found Mayfon wrapped up in a blanket, huddled over the fire. Mayfon! He hustled toward her. She didn't turn. Her lithe body quaked inside the blankets. Dropping the driftwood in the fire, he kneeled in front of her. Her eyes were weak, skin pale, and lips cracked. You need to get back inside and out of this harsh wind.
No, her voice was dry and raspy. My toes are cold. I need to warm them.
You need to stay inside until the fever breaks, Nath insisted. She shook her head. Let me at least get you something to drink. She nodded. Nath found his water skin and helped her drink. Drink a lot or you'll shrivel. She gulped down several swallows, then let out a gasp.
I'm still ice cold, but feeling a tad stronger.
That's good. Her eyes scanned the camp.
So, Darkin is gone?
They're scouting. She took his hands in hers, pulled him close, got cheek to cheek with him, and said in his ear,
Nath, come into the tent with me and keep me warm.
Chapter 5 High in the sky, Sliver and Elwyn circled above Morgton, the dwarven city. The vast city of stone and iron had been hewn out of the mountains, supported and also framed by massive beams of iron. It was perfectly fortified, a mountain castle full of mighty spires and watchtowers. As they glided in the sky, Elwyn said to Sliver,
So, do we drop in and find this Boldegild?
Shaking his head, Sliver replied, No. The dwarves wouldn't take kindly to a pair of dragons dropping in, or anyone else for the matter. Do you see those ballistae in the towers? I'm fairly certain they are loaded with Moorite bolts that could shred us.
If they can hit us.
Can you dodge a hail of 50 missiles at once?
Probably.
I'd rather not see that happen, Sliver replied. With his keen eyes he could make out the dwarves milling about. The stocky bearded men worked, marched, drank, ate, and reveled. Dedicated to their back-breaking engineering and laboring feats, they often ran for long hours over many months. Once they finished the task, they spent a great deal of time celebrating their hard work. Morgdon was a hive of activity in all shapes and forms, a well-organized, proud, hard-working unit.
So how are we supposed to find this Boldegild? Do we knock at the front gate? She asked. The dwarves are private, though known to have many guests, as they love to show off their accomplishments. But we want to use discretion. Two dragons stopping by for a visit will draw a great deal of attention. We just need to be seen long enough for the Boulder Guilds to get notice of our presence.
That's it. Fly above them in circle a few times, she said.
That will do it. Follow me. Sliver beat his wings and jetted away in the skies. With Elwine in pursuit, he dove toward the icy caps of the mountains, landing beside a guard tower made from stone in deteriorating condition that had been abandoned likely centuries ago. The tower had a clear view of the western valley that stretched out as far as the eye could see. We'll wait for him here. Walking around the base of the tower that stood on legs made from solid columns of chiseled stone, Elwine said,
A very remote location for a rendezvous.
Yes, and it will probably take days for Brenwar to get here. Hence we wait on this bitter mountain watching the snow fall around us. He shook his head. Of all the people Balzerth had me team up with, why Brenwar? Why not a turtle or a sloth?
Certainly the dwarf has some merit if Balzerth is so fond of him, Elwine said.
She scratched ice from the tower's legs.
What choice would you have made?
Elves are quick and just as reliable. I've journeyed with them before, and I find them enjoyable. And they are willing to ride on the backs of dragons without having a tantrum. He flexed out his wings and folded them back in. Of course, I'm not big enough to ride, but I'm plenty strong enough to carry them in my arms. Generally speaking, they are light. The dwarves are heavy as stones, dead weight, just like their personalities. A chunk of snow fell from the roof on the top of the tower, landing on the ground near Elwine's feet. She glanced up.
Sliver, look out!
Sliver looked up. An icy ball of snow hit him square in the face. Wiping the frozen grit out of his ice-blue eyes, he opened up his maw. A lightning bolt shot out of his mouth into the tower. Chunks of stone exploded from the guard tower's roost. A burly figure jumped out of the tower, landing deep in the drifts of snow. Sliver and Elwine flanked the menace buried in the snow. "Reveal yourself or die," Sliver said. Deep laughter came from the snow as a burly bearded figure emerged. Short and stocky, a dwarf with a braided beard covered in snow came forward. He patted the belly of his breastplate and started laughing uproariously. He pointed a stubby finger at Sliver.
"Ha-ha-ha-ha! If only you could have seen your scaly face when I hit you! Ha-ha-ha-ha!
Brenwar, you dare do a foolish thing at your own peril!" Sliver swiped his tail at Brenwar's feet, knocking him onto his backside. The dwarf landed in the soft snow but continued laughing. Sliver glanced at Elwine. There was a playful look in her eyes. He pointed his clawed finger at her. "Don't you laugh too?"
"Please laugh, green dragon lady," Brenwar said as he pushed himself out of the snow. "It's always a chuckle to get the best of Sliver."
Brenwar waded through the ankle-deep snow. He shoveled out the snow with his hands and picked up an oaken keg barrel that had busted open.
"Ah, see what you did? You destroyed my ale."
Seeing the ale-stained snow, he packed it into a snowball and started eating it.
All is not lost.
Elwine giggled.
He's very resourceful, you have to admit, and humorous, she said. I can see why Balzerth likes him.
Don't be too elated. He's drunk. That's the only reason he's happy. Sliver packed a snowball in his paws and slung it at Brenwar. Brenwar swatted it down.
"Brenwar, tell me, how did you get here so quick? We just flew over Morgdon. With those stumpy legs, it's impossible that you could get here so fast."
"Don't knock my stumpy legs." Brenwar marched in place in the snow. "They got me here before those wings of yours did, didn't they?"
"Out with it, dwarf. I know you didn't just run up here."
"No, I've been up here waiting on you."
Brenwar swallowed down his snowball and made another. The fine breastplate, made from dwarven steel, shined underneath the gaps between the braids of his beard. His bare arms bulged with brawny muscle. He packed up another ale snowball and ate it, then winked at Elwine.
"I'm a good planner. That's why I beat you."
"Balzerth sent word, didn't he?" Sliver said with a snort.
"I knew I was going to be here before you even knew you were coming here,"
Brenwar bragged.
"Bothers you, don't it?"
"Everything about you bothers me."
Sliver walked up to Brenwar and swatted the snowball out of his hands. Brenwar shoved him in the chest.
"Don't test me, Sliver. I'll tear those scales right off of you."
"Then quit fooling around and pay attention. We have a mission, and we don't want to take a lifetime to complete it, like the others that you managed to delay."
"Dwarves don't fool around. Everything we do has purpose.
Hitting me with a snowball had purpose.
Aye, it aggravated you, didn't?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?